Hi, this is the On the Keys podcast, and I'm your host, David Kaiser. Thanks for tuning in. On this show, the inner workings of music, and the latest and greatest for the piano. Also stories, lore, and an altogether relaxing and educational good time. Where history is important, but new composers given their due. It's the On the Keys podcast, a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Please subscribe wherever you can find podcasts, and tell your friends. Movement 2, not your compositions, I'm sorry to say, but we have a special feature. How often do you get to hear a dramatic reading, Mozart, Robert Browning, Charlatan, and Abt Vogler in one breath? Right now on the show, don't go anywhere. I first wanted to ask the question about piano music and posterity. What gives a piano piece sticking power to live on after the composer passes away? By the way, I'm planning a Music and Genius show, so just stay posted for that one. Then I read a book about music and poetry and discovered a poem by Robert Browning about a guy named Abt Vogler. Not his full name, but perhaps a thinly veiled pun? This Renaissance man's full name was Georg Joseph Vogler. He was, among many things, an ordained priest, an organist, a keyboardist, a teacher, a founder of at least three music schools, and was a composer and also devised his own system of fingering on the keyboard. He was a composer, and a mediocre one at that. Abby Vogler impressed many with popular arrangements like a fugal organ piece on themes from Handel's Hallelujah, and a piece called Storm. Vogler also traveled widely and fancied up some of his keyboard pieces with foreign melodies. During the same period, Mozart had not the same kind of public sway and total success that Vogler had. Ironically, Mozart died destitute but lived on in memory. Vogler's musical achievements died with him, though two of his students, I might add, lived on in some sense, Weber and Meyerbeer, and their names are remembered today. They are remembered today, but without the hallowed status of a Mozart. Vogler was a man of God, but why did Mozart call him a charlatan? Or was it Clementi that Mozart called a charlatan, or did Mozart call many people charlatans? And what does Robert Browning have to do with all this? Vogler was a leader of the orchestra in Mannheim, and here's the catch. Many of the musicians thought he should have not had such a powerful position. In the words of biographer Hermann Ebert, many thought Vogler was putting on airs by sending out prayer books of his compositions and wearing purple socks. It seems to me that maybe Mozart was just a little jealous. Vogler's music can be quite nice. Take this piece. Etc. And if only Vogler knew how close he was to Chariots of Fire, because a few bars later in this piece we hear this. Just kidding, but very close to those melodies. Now, a musical comparison, I think, describes Mozart and Vogler's aesthetic and personality differences better than any words can. Witness the treatment of the theme to the old French nursery song we come to know as Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. Vogler wrote his variations a few years after Mozart did, and he wrote 16 of them, whereas Mozart wrote 12. That says enough already. So here is Georg Joseph Vogler's theme. Here is Mozart's theme. This is a simple example featuring a simple variation set by the two composers that was probably just written to showcase the chops of the performer. But I think that Mozart's resonates on a deeper level. First, Mozart is not using such a formulaic accompaniment to the theme. Where Vogler uses chords, Mozart seems to suggest that the left hand or lower voice part can also be interesting. Remember Vogler's. Chord, chord, chord. Here's Mozart's. The left hand takes on a bit of light. Also, Vogler's left hand repeats many of the same notes, which gets tiring. Here's just the left hand of the theme. And here's Mozart's left hand. Mozart is able to have variation and contrast with embellishments in the theme. So in a sense, he starts the variations even before the variations proper start. He starts adding dotted 8/16th notes, then establishes that as a motif. Then he ornaments the embellishments, or that motif, during the second part of the theme. It's effortless. This is what I mean. And then later, he ornaments the ornament, so to speak. So, ba-dee-dum, and he adds, and at the very end, anyone who has tried ornamenting or embellishing a melody knows it can often sound flat or cheesy. It's very hard to do. That's where my analysis ends and Aaron Copland's begins.
You must be able to hear these things.
From a letter to Mozart, quote, "We can pour over him, dissect him, marvel over him, or carpet him. But in the end, there remains something that will not be seized. That is why each time a Mozart work begins," I'm thinking of the finest examples, "we composers listen with a certain awe and wonder, and not unmixed with despair. The wonder we share with everyone. The despair comes from the realization that only this one man at this one moment in musical history could have created works that seem so effortless and so close to perfection." End quote.
Professional musicians to play nowadays, you can hear a high school orchestra almost.
So then what becomes of Vogler? A man who, despite his personality and earthly success, must have felt that stab of despair when faced with Mozart's best. Robert Browning has an answer for us in his dramatic expositions of the man in the poem Abt Vogler. Here, Vogler is talking to himself in a dramatic monologue. He has built up a palace of music that has reached the heavens. But in a moment of deep thought, he realizes later in the monologue that the great works of architecture he has created will fall and will disappear, either because of his eventual death or lack of recording technology, or because he has discovered that his music will not stand the test of time one way or the other.
"Well, it is gone at last, the palace of music I reared. Gone, and the good tears start, the praises that come too slow. For one is assured at first, one scarce can say that he feared, that he even gave it a thought, the gone thing was to go. Never to be again, but many more of the kind as good, nay, better, perchance. Is this your comfort to me who must be saved because I cling with my mind to the same self, same love, same God. I, what was, shall be."
Vogler then puts his trust in God to keep the music alive and to make it perfect.
"Therefore, to whom I turn but to thee, the ineffable name, builder and maker, thou of houses not made with hands, what have fear of change from thee who art ever the same? Doubt that thy power can fill the heart that thy power expands? There shall never be one lost good. What was shall live as before. The evil is null, is not, is silence implying sound. What was good shall be good, with for evil so much good more. On the earth the broken arcs, in the heaven a perfect round."
All we have willed, or hoped, or dreamed of good shall exist. Not its semblance, but itself. No beauty, nor good, nor power, whose voice has gone forth, but each survives for the melodist. When eternity affirms the conception of an hour, the high that proved too high, the heroic for earth too hard, the passion that left the ground to lose itself in the sky. Our music sit up to God by the lover and the bard. Enough that he heard it once, we shall hear it by and by.
However, Vogler doubts himself once more. Was he one of the composers that God whispered to?
And what is our failure here but a triumph's evidence for the fullness of the days? Have we withered or agonized? Why else was the pause prolonged, but that singing might issue thence? Why rushed the discords in, but that harmony should be prized? Sorrow is hard to bear, and doubt is slow to clear. Each sufferer says his say, his scheme of the weal and woe. But God has a few of us whom he whispers in the ear. The rest may reason and welcome. 'Tis we musicians know.
Then Vogler comes to peace with himself, and once more, like thousands of times before, he returns to the practice of music and places his hands on the keys.
Well, it is earth with me. Silence resumes her reign. I will be patient and proud and soberly acquiesce. Give me the keys. I feel for the common chord again, sliding by semitones till I sink to the minor. Yes, and I blunt it to a ninth, and I stand on alien ground, surveying a while the heights I rolled from into the deep, which, hark, I have dared and done, for my resting place is found. The C major of this life, so now I will try to sleep.